Hi everyone, Mike Hancock here, the chairman of the Circle of Excellence group of companies. And our update today is about hardcore prospecting. Now, you may have this awareness yourself, but quite literally when I went and started looking for photos that literally represented hardcore prospecting, you know, I couldn't really use any of those because every one of them was blocked to me. So obviously, something online had a different meaning than what I had, because to me, hardcore prospecting really is about finding your right leases and making sure that those right leases are exactly right for you. So today we're going to cover off how to do that. And if you like, this is an area, and you know me, I'm going to throw this around a little bit with the people on the call. This is an area whereby I want to focus on not only the leaser, who's that lady that you're seeing on your screen at the moment, which for those of you that are listening and not watching, is your ideal client, because your ideal client is not a job. Your ideal client is not a company. Your ideal client is a human being. So where the leaser is a CEO of a multinational, where the leaser is an employee, where the leaser is a mum with two kids, that depends on what you do. But hardcore prospecting is about proactively going out and finding these leases. So what is it? What it's not is it's not social media marketing. It's not putting some posts up and hoping that somebody's going to respond to them. It's not turning up blindly to networking functions and hoping that somebody's going to refer people to you. It seriously is about you literally firing the message that is a missile. Yes, Andrea, thank goodness. It's you firing the missile that's going to absolutely hit the target, and the target is your leaser, whoever that may be. So this is what hardcore prospecting is about. And it's so funny that I have to talk about this because when I first got into sales and selling in my very early 20s, and I became initially at that stage an assistant manager of a financial services company, which had a team of around about 20 something salespeople. And then we built it over the 2 years I was assistant manager to nearly 50 salespeople. All of those salespeople only ever did hardcore prospecting. There was no reactive prospecting whatsoever happened. It was all extremely proactive prospecting. So that's what this is about. Yet I think in the digital world, it's given us an excuse as business people to walk away from doing some of the tough stuff and do the easy stuff and hope that we're going to get the same results as what the tough stuff gave us. So that's not the case. And there's very few people that can get the results literally just doing a few posts here and there and hoping for the best. So I want to take you in a different direction on this. I want to take you in a direction of really understanding what this is about and what hardcore prospecting is about, because it is literally about targeted, laser pointed aiming of you and your sales message at a particular person. In this case, we call them Lisa. So what does that mean? It means it's proactive. So step one, we need to understand the psychographic and demographic of who Lisa is. In this case, Lisa is this man here. So firstly, demographics are easy. So I'm not really going to go and cover those because this is just like teaching babies how to suck dummies. Demographics are how old are they? What industry are they in? What job title do they have? You know, how many children do they have? What are their interests? What's their disposable income? They're all of those sort of things make up demographics. Psychographics is where the important stuff happens. And it's so often forgotten, particularly when I see people and they're at masterminds, they always tell me my perfect prospect is, and then they tell me a demographic. Oh, they're a CEO. The company's doing 3 million a year. And they're telling me that's their perfect prospect. But no, they have no idea who that person is or why, what even their motivations are to buy. So firstly, you need to understand what your leaser's major motivations are. Why would they be motivated at all? So, for instance, what are corporate CEOs worried about today? They're worried about recruiting, training, development, retention, getting people to work at work, productivity, the same old things I were worried about 40 years ago, to be quite honest with you. But on the other hand, by the 40 years have changed because they're having to become more flexible. When I was in my first jobs, nobody ever talked about, oh, sorry, boss, I've got to leave the office. I've got to pick my kids up from school. That didn't happen in the 80s, I can promise you. Nobody said, oh, I think I'll work from home today. That didn't happen in the 80s. So corporate CEOs these days and entrepreneurs who've got staff, we have to become more flexible. So what's our major motivation as a CEO, as the leaser that you are looking for? Feel free to go to the chat and tell me what you think the major motivation of your client, your potential client, the leaser that you're seeking is. For those of you that just joined the call, today we're talking about really hardcore prospecting. This is proactive prospecting. And I am suffering from a bit of a sore throat today. So you'll see me drinking water and taking a few breaks and not being my normal, just talking a lot self. I even have my little lolly here next to me that I may have to suck at some stage while we're going backwards and forwards and listening to some of you speak. So my second question is, what keeps them up at 3 a.m.? So your perfect person, the person that you're after, what's waking them up in the middle of the night? Again, I would love you to go to the chat. I see nobody in the chat giving me any feedback. Oh, here it comes on what the major motivation of your leaser is and what is keeping them up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And thirdly, if you want to answer this question, what excites them? So what's exciting these people? So Andrea, thank you for your feedback. You're saying your perfect leaser is currently losing market share and wondering what the hell they should be doing. Absolutely, 100%. I think this is a great thing for many of the people on this call. Even though you're in different businesses, essentially, we're all trying to do the same things. We're all trying to help people get greater market share, greater profitability, and that sort of thing. So that's a good realization. But Andrew, I'm going to ask you to go deeper on it. So whilst you're thinking about that, let's move on. Heather says team performance, engagement, and the bottom line. So Heather, again, they're worried about their performance and engagement and what that means to the bottom line. Let's see if we can get deeper on that. Karen says money and health. Okay, so you're working in the individual market more so, Karen. So they're working on health. That's great. Heather is again creating high performance teams that are connected and innovative. So that's what their focus is. Do they even understand what that means, Heather? That's what I'd be inquisitive about. Like they tell you, I've sat in so many meetings where CEOs have said, I want to build a high performance team. And we're like, what does that mean? No, it means a team that performs well. You tell me how that looks. No, they must meet their targets. Is there anything else? No, that's pretty much it. That's not a high performance team. That's a team that meets targets. So keep that in mind. Hi, Philippe. Welcome to the call. My prospects get excited by the creation of a new product and a new venture. That's very exciting. So you are assisting them to create, to bring their dreams to life. So you may want to use that snapshot, actually. That was a catchphrase that I came up with for an advertising campaign in the early 90s for a financial services company I work for. And our catchphrase, our one-liner, like Circle of Excellence, is help people play a bigger game, was bringing your dreams to life. That's essentially what you do. Router, welcome to the call. Lovely to see you here. How to sustain their business. Great. So again, thinking deeper on this, what does sustainability mean? So does it mean that there won't be changes? Does it mean that they will have the same number of staff? Does it mean that they will have the same products? So giving that some deeper thought as to what it really means. Hi, Cheryl, welcome to the call. Coaches who need new clients. They're worried that they'll have to return to their full-time jobs. Absolutely. This probably is one of the clearer ones for me. And give up their passion. They get excited when they have prospects come to them through word of mouth. But Cheryl, as you know, Not too many prospects come to coaches through word of mouth. You know, it's sort of like if they're really visible, they'll get some. But I'm telling you, I talk to some of the best coaches in the world, and they are some of the best marketers in the world as well. But I think you've nailed it. This is what, if you're working with coaches, their number one concern is, I don't want to give up my passion and return and get a job. Great to dive deeper, Heather. Sam, pain and anxiety. Yes, and it's anxiety, Sam. You're in the medical field for those that don't know, and welcome to the call. It's anxiety, it's the unsureness. It's actually probably, am I going to die, be disabled, or disfigured? They're probably the three big ones that you're dealing with. Dorvi, how to stay alive or get through the unknown journey that awaits them. Again, you're working with people who are in major trauma. So their concern is how to stay alive and get through really the next 6 months, or in fact, the next 6 weeks. So I think you've got to make these things really personal. If you can make these things as personal as possible, then you can really target this. And I know with Dorvi, I know Landy's been working very solidly backwards and forwards with you on this messaging. And I think you have a very, very clear Lisa developing that you're working with. So that's great. Bert, hi, welcome to the call. Major motivations, ensuring compliance. No. The major motivation is what happens if they are not compliant. That's the major motivation. And often, this is where the left brain and the right brain play backwards and forwards with us. So we know practically that if we're in business, we must comply with this, this, and this. But that's not what really worries us. What really worries us is when we don't comply, what's going to happen to us? We don't want to go to jail. We don't want to get massive fines. We don't want our reputation damaged. Often with compliance, it's reputation driven. And what keeps them up? Losing accreditation, losing their potential to get business because they have no accreditation. So think deeper about it. Reputational harms, good, you've noticed that one, I just saw it, to institution themselves personally and professionally. That's more it. Okay. What happens if this happens? Andrea puts in. So that's good. The market has shifted around them. They believe they have a business that's still able to exist. What they don't understand is how to go about achieving their goals in the changing market. What you find is that they have great ideas, but not the clarity to understand if it will work or not. So they don't know what to do. They don't want to get to the finish line failing or having failed. I think this is very true. So in that case, you have, there's a lot of reassurance. There's a lot of hand-holding in this. There's a lot of straight talk in this. This is not a marketplace for pussyfooting around and going, no, you're great. It's all going to work out. You're wonderful. It's a marketplace for saying, listen, your ideas were solid, but do you really feel that this is what the changing marketplace is going to go towards because this is what you had, right? Or another way to put that is the way I put it is, the ideas that served me in my 20s and 30s didn't serve me in my 40s, definitely don't serve me in my 50s or 60s, right? So things have to change, things have to adapt, things have to develop. So thank you for that. That's really good feedback. And I love the feedback, even though you kept me talking. So let's move on. So, firstly, in order to find your best leases, one of the ways to do this, if you're unsure, is to start to study your top existing clients. Pardon me, drinking my tea. And what I'm talking about is the top 20% of revenue over the last 3 or 4 years. If you go and look, let's just say, let's keep it in simple numbers. If you bring in 100 new clients a year, then look at the top 20 for every year and top 20 in terms of revenue that they've brought to you. That's a good way to do it, or profit if you can do that. That's a better way. Then you look at what's the same between these people. What do these people have that's crossing over your own interests? And I'll describe that in a minute. What clubs or associations do they belong to? And then you're going to start to get a picture of your perfect Lisa. Why is this your perfect Lisa? because they pay you lots of money. And guess what? When you look at these people, they're probably going to be your least problematic clients at the same time. It just tends to work that way. It's like a universal law. And the universal law basically states that the more people pay, the less trouble they are. Okay? So never be scared to put up your prices. You may get more clients or less clients, but you'll have less troubles and it'll be easier to serve those clients. So I remember this came to me many, many years ago. I was in my late 20s, financial planning, and I realized that the biggest, I did this exercise. I don't think I came up with the idea originally, but I did this exercise and I found that in the top 20% of revenue, my clients, they were all aged between 35 and 55. So they were a lot older than me at the time. They all owned businesses, which is unusual because a lot of financial planners is focused on CEOs, but they all owned their own business. So they were all entrepreneurs. All of their businesses were in service type industry. So I had no manufacturers, no retailers. All of these people, they had a turnover between 500,000 and at the time 2 million. So I guess that'd be close to about maybe 8 or 9 million today. All of them were married with kids. I was single. Then all of them were sports crazy. That was a big crossover with me. I was involved in a lot of sport at the time. I was on committees of the cricket club, the football club, etc. I played golf, I went to the gym every day. I swam at the pool. I did boxing with my buddies before work and all that sort of stuff. So I had a lot of sporting interests, and so did my clients. So I'd go there, we'd have coffee, we'd talk, and we'd be talking about the footy on the weekend or what's happening at Wimbledon or something like that, and what's happening in their kids' sports and all that sort of stuff. And they just bought off me. Very, very simple. So when you start to look at this, you start to realize that your marketplace is not like this. It's not that broad. Your marketplace is actually quite narrow. Even if you go, oh, my marketplace is 40-year-old women. Well, it might be, I don't know, maybe 400 million of them on the planet. But when you start to break it down further, your marketplace might be 2,000 people potentially in your market. But for most of you don't need anywhere near 2,000 clients. So for us, Circle of Excellence, there are 250 of you basically over the last 10 years. So you don't need a lot of clients to live a very good lifestyle if you're in a services industry. If you're in a high-tech box turnover retail industry, or if you're trying to sell ebooks online, that's a different story. But do this study. This study is very freeing. Just go back and look over your last few years. You can't do this if you're new in the business, of course, and look at this and do this study. Okay, so let's have a look at the types of proactive prospecting activities that you can do. Referrals. And I'm talking proactive. So what I'm saying is, what I'm not saying is, you wait for the phone to ring and Bob says, "Hey, I was thinking of you today and I was thinking of Mary. You should really talk to Mary." That's not proactive. That's just a referral. So, a proactive referral generating activity. We'll talk a little bit more about that soon. Networking. And we're going to talk a little bit about networking soon, but proactive networking. I'm aware that many of you, not me, I tend to go to networking events these days, but I certainly was this at times in my life where I've done networking. Go to networking events where we turn up with the best intentions. We pass out our business card to 10 people and we go, "Wow, that was a good night." We try and talk them all into our services and we leave with nothing, right? We may as well have stayed at home and watched Neighbours, Binnelunders, Shortland Street, Coronation Street, or whatever else is your soap of choice, depending on where you live around the world. The third one is situation prospecting. This is the literally, you walk into an elevator and there's your perfect prospect. You go to a barbecue on the weekend and somebody's invited your perfect prospect. You go to the football and you sit next to your perfect prospect. You get on a plane and you sit next to your perfect prospect. That's situational prospecting. So you have to be very aware. I've had some of the best clients that I've ever got. And even one of my two real mentors in life came to me through situational prospecting. He and I were on a plane in business class together. By the way, I didn't talk to him, he spoke to me. That was in the 90s, and he's a wonderful man in his early 80s these days, right? So, situational prospecting, you have to have your story so refined that you can roll it out at the drop of a hat. Clubs and associations, pick and choose. And I'll talk about these a little bit more in detail in a minute. LinkedIn, right? LinkedIn, we'll talk about that one. Events, and I'm talking about running your own events and guest speaking, being a guest at somebody else's events. So now let's pick up a few of these. I want to talk about clubs and associations. Now, we get a lot of people on these calls from South Africa, Australia, New Zealand. Obviously, that's where a lot of our client base is, also, and the time zone suits that rather than America, which the time zone's terrible for these calls from America. So we get a lot of people who go, oh, but should I become a member of the rugby club or the football club? The answer is maybe, but probably not. If you've got a more fringe sport, then you're probably going to get a better opportunity at a fringe sport. For instance, when I was first financial planning, all my friends played hockey. I didn't play hockey, I played cricket during the summer, but my friends played hockey. So cricket was a very popular sport at the time, and clubs were big, and I think in our club there were 12 teams. So there was a lot going on. But the hockey club, that was a bit of an old boys' network. It was sort of the school hockey club, and it was people who had worked and gone through the school and other people they'd brought in. It was in the right area of the town, South Yarra for you, Philippe, so you understand. And so what I did is I became a sponsor for that club. And what did that sponsorship do? It bought, I think, some drinks or a bottle of champagne for the best player of the day and seniors. And I awarded a trophy that every week for the best player of the day. So I was literally, it took an hour of my week, Saturday afternoon, 5:30, I'd go to the hockey club. The games were over, people were having drinks. I'd get up, a glass would ding, somebody would go, here's Mike, I'd go, hi everybody, I'm Mike Hancock, I'm from such and such a company. As you know, I'm a major sponsor of this hockey club. I'm going to announce today's player of the day. But before I do, I just want you to know that before the year's out, I'm going to be talking to each and every one of you about your financial plans. Okay, the day's player is such and such. And then I'd give the trophy and give the bottle of wine. There'd be claps, I'd stay, have a drink, then I'd leave because I wasn't that interested in the hockey. And then I'd just ring people off the hockey list and go, hey, George, Mike here, As you know, every time I speak, I say I'm going to move around the club and talk to everybody about financial planning. It's your turn this week. When can we meet? And that's what I did. And it made me a lot of money. And it literally cost me next to nothing. So clubs and associations can be really, really good for that sort of thing. Sean, hello. Welcome to the call. When prospecting, at what point do you add the prospect into your CRM? Very good question. Once they move from what I call a suspect to a prospect. And a suspect means that you suspect that they may be right for you. And a prospect means that they are right for you and you've had an initial conversation. Even if at that stage it's a, oh, I'll get back to me in a few months or something like that. If they haven't hung the phone up in your ear or told you to nick off, then they probably should go into your CRM. But just putting hundreds of people into your CRM doesn't seem to make any difference. That's a list. So if you look at a database that you've got on MailChimp or Confusionsoft or something like that, then I call that suspects. That's a list of suspects. Of course, there are prospects mingled in with them. Okay, let's move now to events. I think each and every one of you on this call can put together two or three events a year with some other people where you're going to have the opportunity to talk to anywhere between 30 and 50 people in a room, network the room, you own the event, you have the right, everybody's interested in you. It's your event to put on. So, if I'm Heather, for instance, and I want to talk about Flow Academy, then I might put that together with somebody in the health space, and I might put that together with somebody in the hardcore business space, and I might do an event. And we all invite our lists along. Even if it's only your own people turning up, those people are going to have a much better opinion of you by the time the event's finished, and you're going to tweak some things in them by talking to them one-on-one and also by giving your 10 or 15-minute presentation from stage. So I think that's a really good one. Andrea says, I have one in 2 weeks that I'm organizing 120 attendees for a day. 100%, Andrea. It's going to do you really well. Now, what you do need off there is you need some sort of capture off there. You want to capture them. So, and the same goes for guest speaking. They're the same thing. So you said done, great, that's excellent. Doing an event in July with Ian, so excited. That's great. You two working together, perfect, nice energy, great energy balance. Going to have the right people in the room. Excellent. Landy and I did a talk, not this weekend, but the last weekend in Johannesburg, which we're in again today. There were 90 people in the room. It wasn't our audience. We didn't invite them. We were guest speakers. We were one of many guest speakers on the day. I think they had five guest speakers on the day. And we had a capture mechanism. The capture mechanism was simply a QR code. And I wanted to see who was in. I wanted to see if there were any of my leases in the audience. So I gave my QR code pitch, and people went to the QR code. I had 23 people out of the 90 odd in the room that went to the QR code. Only one of them in that was my leaser, but the other 22 I invited to a webinar that I'm doing tomorrow. No, the day after tomorrow. And I think I have 17 of them registered for that. So they're definitely, some of them are going to buy something. So one of them is my perfect leaser that I want, and the others will end up buying something. So that's how you can harvest these type of spaces. Plus, we have so much good rapport. We've been invited back to do more and more things with the organizer as well. So I'm interested now in asking you to go to the chat and write down here which of these seven things are you actively doing right now? Which of these seven things are you actively doing right now in this month? And we're in the middle of the month. If you can just do that for a second, that will be great while I drink my tea. We have our first chatter come back. There's the second one. Let's see what everyone's saying. LinkedIn and networking events. That's good, Heather. Referrals, networking events, guest speaking, LinkedIn. Great. Referrals, networking, LinkedIn, and club. Great, Philippe. I saw Bert there. Where's he disappeared? LinkedIn events, guest speaking. Great. Corbis events, networking, LinkedIn, guest speaking, and television. Don't forget television. That's a really proactive thing. Whilst it's reactive, for you to get gigs on television and radio is quite proactive. Sean associations, networking, LinkedIn, great. Cheryl, networking clubs and associations. Referral networking clubs, networking associations, LinkedIn, event guest speaking, networking clubs, LinkedIn speaking, and yes, TV. So thank you so much for your feedback, team. That's been really great. I think if you're not doing three of these currently, actively, and they're in your plan every week, then you're probably going to be missing out on reaching some of your targets. So just keep that in mind. Because I want you to succeed. Let's move on. So, with that, I think you need some sort of activity plan, some targets, some actions. So, they could be simple things like here's an activity plan. This is just a made-up one. You could commit to attending two networking meetings per month. You could commit to asking at least one of your existing clients each week for referrals. If you work 45 weeks a year, that's 45 clients. Think how many referrals you're going to get. You're going to get on stage at least once a quarter at somebody else's event and tell your story. You're going to personally run three events a year, maybe one in March, one in June, and one in September. And you're going to farm 30 people on LinkedIn every day. So that means interact, talk to 30 potential leases on LinkedIn every day. If you were to do this, I think for most of you that are in services type businesses, you would have a very solid type of business. So I'm going to leave that with you. I'm interested if you've got any feedback, if there is something that you would like to share, if you feel this is doable, if you feel this is unrealistic. I look at this and I think this is very doable, but I'm interested in your feedback on it. Two networking meetings per month. You can just put a yay or a nay in the chat. Ask one client each week for referrals. Get on stage each quarter. Run three events per year. And farm 30 LinkedIns a day. Doable. Thank you, Philippe. Yes, thank you, Adila. But doable. Okay. So my obvious question is, do we actually have a weekly activity plan like this? That every week we have, and maybe we even put aside time in our diary. I mean, I'm sure you go to your diary and you write meeting with Joe Bloggs on Thursday at 1:30 and you block out an hour for that. Do you go to your diary and block out an hour to farm the 30 LinkedIn prospects? Because if you're not, you should. Or else, whatever you're trying to do, when you look back at that, you may go, gee, I haven't really done it the last few weeks. I must improve. And it's that I must improve that sets us up for failure instead of just diarizing and doing this stuff. Okay, we're talking about hardcore prospecting here. So I'm telling you, hardcore diarize it. Okay, let's move on. Successful people do the things that unsuccessful people are not prepared to do. Jim Rohn was Tony Robbins' mentor, Mark Victor Hansen's mentor, Jack Canfield's mentor. And a lot of what you think they said didn't come from them, it came from him. So I love this statement. I learned this in the 90s. I didn't know it was from Jim Rohn at all myself at that stage. I thought it was from somebody else entirely, but it's something I say often. So if you are prepared to commit to an activity plan to do some of the things like we just had on the last slide, and you do that every week and you diarize it, your business is going to shift. It's going to shift. And by the way, I have to do this stuff myself, right? I know I've got Chris on the call. Chris has an activity plan as well. We have to have these activity plans. We know exactly what we have to do. So now I want you to automate referrals, because this is a task to automate referrals. It's not a luxury. And what I mean by that is, you know, this is not just, oh, I'm going to get a few referrals and that will be good, et cetera, et cetera. I think referrals make up about 30% of our business. And so what I'm talking about when I get to referrals, I'm talking about you actively canvassing your clients for referrals. So step one, have your scripts ready. What do I mean by that? Well, firstly, you have to have something you're going to tell your client. To get referrals, you just don't go to them and say, oh, can I have some referrals, please? I'm not going to tell you what this is. It's all in week six of the new Circle of Excellence program. You can go and look at it. Week six, I mean, module six of the Circle of Excellence program. Sorry, module five, in fact. Module five of Circle of Excellence, you can get that there. But you're going to have then a script of, once they give you a name, how do you reach out to them? Then when you get them on the first call, what do you say to them? Then how do you give feedback to the person who gave you a referral? So you need those scripts. Then get them to recommend people without giving you advice. Advice is irrelevant at the start. So if I'm meeting with Chris to get some referrals, then I'm going to say, Chris, I want to give you the psychograph and the demographic of the exact person I'm looking for. And as I say this, I want you to just yell out names. I'm going to write the names down. I'm not going to judge, neither are you, whether they're the right people at this stage. So the person I'm after has to be, and I give them three things, no more than three things, because people's minds can't accept more than three things. Okay, so choose a demographic. They have to be an entrepreneur in their own business with X number of staff or in a service industry, and they're probably turning over around about this much, or they're doing that. There's one demographic. Two, psychographic. They have to be really wanting to make an impact in the world, and that has been as much a focus for them in their life and everything they do, as well as having a successful business. There's my psychographic. And number three, they have to be open-minded to looking at new ways to do and build their business. And they have to be excited about things that they didn't know. There's another psychographic. Who do you know who is like that? And then they just start reading out names. Don't get them to go, oh, I don't know if such and such is right or not. Just move them. Yep, I'll write it down. We'll talk about that later. Once they've run out of names, then you can go back and go, tell me about Bill, tell me about Mary, tell me about Sue. Then a phone list is great. If people are going, oh, gee, I'm struggling, or here's one or two, I can't really think of any more, just be bold. Just say, look, grab your phone for a quick minute, go to the contact list and just scroll. Just quickly scroll through the contact list and see if anybody else rings a bell that meets those three criteria. Remember those criteria, they are, and just re-mention them. When people scroll through their phone, they go, oh, yeah, he'd be perfect. Oh, she'd be great. Oh, I don't know how I forgot about them. So you're going to pick up more referrals that way. And then create your own referrals with LinkedIn. So if I'm going to go see Chris and ask him for referrals, the first thing I'm going to do is go in all over his LinkedIn profile and Facebook if I have to, and any other social media he's got if I'm really serious. And I'm going to create a list of potential people that I want him to introduce me to that I can see from their profile meets the type of demographic and potentially psychographic I've got. Then I'm going to say, first, I'm going to ask him for referrals. And he's going to give me one, two, three, maybe four. I'm going to say, thank you, Chris. Can I run some names by you? Then I'm going to run X number of names by him, maybe 20 or 30, and I might pick up another three or four that way. Now I've solidly got off Chris five, six, seven referrals. There's got to be a couple of really great ones in that. And then always close the loops. So now I've got the referrals. Now the first thing I'll do is I'll ask Chris to send my email with my script to the referral and copy me in. Then I'll pick it up from there. And once I've talked to the referral, I'll always come back and say, this is where they're at. This is what's happening now. This is what's going next. Or yes, they've become a client, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if you have to compensate people for giving referrals, that's up to you. If you want to, that's up to you. It could be a dinner, a bottle of wine. It could be something more substantial. It depends on what you're doing and what the product is. So, I'm going to ask you a question. Who here feels that in the next month they can set up a system to automate referrals that hasn't done this before? I'd love you to put that in the chat if you feel that this is something that you can do. We're going to get some open, honest people. Oh, Andrea, you're like the perfect person. You say yes to everything. But I know that you're actually a bit of a hard ass, so it's just great. You've got a really good mind, right? Heather says, doable. Great. I would love to see you guys do this, right? This is really going to help your business. Thank you, Philippe. I'm really glad that you'll make it happen. Perfect. And any of the others of you that are considering this, do this. It will revolutionize your business and it will bring you closer to your clients as well. Dorvi, don't think it'll work for me as I'm more personal than volume. It may work for you because maybe the referrals aren't existing clients, maybe they're potential partners, but it's still the same automated process that you go through. Bert says, I feel this is very unlike my natural way of being, so this will be a challenge and something I've never done before. Absolutely. But take a leaf, Bert, from our other Circle of Excellence member who shares your surname, Caroline Moore. And Caroline tried a lot of things that she was very uncomfortable with, and she's just having the greatest success after success after success. So you have to make this your own. It can't come across as a Mikeism or canned or in any way sort of like this. You have to make it really friendly and your own and in your own way of doing it. This is just the structure. You're getting out of your comfort zone. Yeah, it is getting out of your comfort zone, Karen, but it's this get successful people are prepared to do the things that unsuccessful people aren't prepared to do, i.e., getting out of our comfort zone. Let's move on. So now I want to unpack effective networking. So, firstly, when you go to a networking event, Go with the mindset to give, not to get. So what I mean by that is go with the mindset of helping as many people that you introduce yourself to rather than just trying to hand out business cards and get business. That changes the energy and also shifts the neediness and anxiety, because sometimes you go to a networking event and you know, people are like pariahs. They latch onto you trying to sell their stuff. You know, it makes it very unpleasant. I just posted a simple task I wanted done on Upwork yesterday, and Landy got a phone call from somebody in India pitching her on why he should do the task. I don't even know. He obviously found her number somewhere and rung. I just took the phone and told him to F off. And I said, this is not a way to get business. You'll never get business this way. That's why you're still working like this and trying to tout like this. It's not going to help you build relationships with people, right? Now bugger off. So you're there to give, not to get. Use your intuition at a networking event, not line of sight. So what I mean by that is a lot of us walk into the room and go, oh, we've got to meet people. Okay, there's one. I'm looking at him. He's looking at me, right? So I'll go over there. Oh, hi, how are you? No, don't do that. Sit there, get your cocktail or whatever you do. Stand in the corner, gauge the room, use your intuition, and decide who you want to actually meet. You'll get a lot better result. Make it a game. And so what I mean by making networking a game is when you go to somebody, I always like to say, hi, I'm Mike, what's your name? And they say, oh, I'm Mary. I say, hi, Mary. Tell me, why did you decide to come to this networking event? Oh, I come to these regularly, et cetera. You know, I like to meet new people. That's great, Mary. What is it specifically that you were looking for? Oh, well, I'm doing this. And then you just listen to them. And then I like to bring out my LinkedIn for them and say, right, let me have a quick look here. I think there's somebody you should connect with. Oh, here's Heather Cresswell. She does that. I think she'd be a really good contact for you. You know, here's Philippe Guichard. Do this. Here's Rauta Sakuos. Do that. So this way I'm giving constantly. Now, all I've said at this stage is, hi, I'm Mike. And then I give. And then if I don't like the energy, or if I don't like the way this is going, or don't feel after they've told me their story that there's any way I want to work with them, I just say, thanks very much. And I'm going to move on to somebody else now and enjoy your evening. Otherwise, if I do want them and I think they're great, I'm just going to say, well, let me tell you who I'm looking for. And then I give them a profile, which is exactly them. So I'm looking for a person who is boom, this, doing that, looking for this, and maybe open-minded to that. Do you know anybody? And they go, that sounds a lot like me. I go, oh, really? Surprise, surprise. And otherwise, they'll give you, even if they say it's not them, I'll say, who do you know? And then we go through that. Now I can say, well, I'd like to keep a relationship. So you make it a game. Have something sticky that people will remember you by. Business cards, sort of the bottom of the pile. Something else would be really unique that you have, but it's got to be something of value, something well-crafted, something that's going to help you be understood and known. One of my friends for many years had scented business cards. They were the most unbelievable things. I mean, like back in the day, I used to put cards in a business card holder, and it was back in the day I did a lot of networking. I had like business card holders that were like 12 inches long, but I could always find her card in those spaces because it was scented. And I used to pull it out from time to time, look at it and think, gee, this is such a good idea. So have something sticky that's going to make them remember you. Have walkaway power. You don't have to stay to the end of the networking event. Set yourself a target. I'm going to find three people or target three leases while I'm there. So now I've got my three, now I'm going to leave, okay? So get on with life. So you don't have to stay. Have walkaway power. Make your excuses and leave. Make sure you have inbuilt into yourself your scripts and introduction techniques. That will really help you. Okay, let's go back here. Immune 4 from the IV bar. Okay, oh, okay, cool. Thanks, Heather. I'll check that out. I think I'm nearly done with it, but thank you. I appreciate it. Love the LinkedIn contact strategy, developing oils to recharge energy, mind, emotions, and spirit. I was pitched at a networking marketing company from an attendee to one of my workshops. It was very disconcerting. Exactly. And, you know, it's sort of like sometimes we get people at our masterminds who pitch other people at our masterminds on things like helping them increase the value of their businesses. And I'm like, really? You're going to do that here? You know, it's just a weird experience. And so you've got to write those people off because that's how sort of fundamentally based they are in the way in which they see the world. They're sort of like eating roadkill. Let's look at it like that, and then we'll all be happy and we can laugh and move on. So there's some effective networking techniques for you. So that's what I wanted to share with you today. I'm so glad I got through it with my voice. Does anybody have anything that they would like to give an input? Because what my method for today was to really excite you about doing some proactive bit of hardcore prospecting and marketing again, and not just relying on people coming to you and not just relying on the social media to bring you clients and word of mouth. So I want to throw this open for anybody who's got any feedback they'd like to give in the last minute. And if not, I want to thank you all for very much for being on the call today. And I wish you all the best. I don't see any hands up, so I think we've said what we're going to say. And thank you, everybody. I look forward to talking to you in another few weeks. And have a wonderful day wherever you are in the world. Singapore, London, I see. South Africa, New Zealand, Australia. That's what I can definitely tell from this one. Okay, catch you around. Bye.
Thanks, Mike.